times before he died. It was good advice. Leash a paper would shake the very foundations of Anevera's power, perhaps freeing Amon of her entirely. And the best part was, the Demaja would never see Abin's hand in it. Abin's smile widened. Abin was pleased to learn Erny was as formidable a haggler in person as he had been through his messengers. Abin had contempt for anyone who could not haggle. He excluded only Amon from that rule, because it was less that Amon could not haggle than that he would not. The result was a fair prize, but after Abin tripled it, as Amon had commanded, it was a sizable sum. Erny and his wife seemed quite pleased as Abin counted out the gold.
Stock's all here.
Erny put the box of Leisha's flower-pressed paper on the counter and lifted off the lid. Abin ran his fingers lightly over the top sheet of the colorful paper, feeling the imprint of the artfully arranged flowers embedded in the weave.
Still smells sweet after all this time.
Keep it dry and it will last forever. Or close enough for mortal men.
Your daughter seems touched by Avram. Perfect in every way. Like a heavenly seraph.
She is.
My master would like to purchase her as a bride. He has empowered me to negotiate her dower, and will be most generous.
How generous?
It doesn't matter. Leash isn't for sale like some horse.
Oh, of course, of course. Please forgive my poor sense of words. Your language eludes me at critical times, it seems. I meant no offense. My master understands that your daughter leads your tribe, and is not some common piece of merchandise. He intends her and your tribe great honor, mingling your blood with his own. At his side, your daughter would be first of all the women in the north, and wield influence in both the deliverer's court and bed to prevent unnecessary bloodshed as my master comes north.
Is that a threat? Are you saying your master will come kill us to take her if I don't sell her to you?
Oh, please, my friend, let us begin again. My master makes no threats and wishes to give no offense. Among our people, it is the father's duty to arrange the marriages of his daughters. Part of the arrangement is that the groom's family provide the father and bride with dower symbolic of her value. I was given to understand that northerners shared this custom.
We do.
Some folk might do that sort of thing, but that's not how I raise my Leisha. Your master wants to marry my girl, he'll have to court her just like anybody else. And if she decides she wants him, then he can come and ask my blessing on it.
I will make your terms clear to my master. I expect he will begin to court your daughter immediately.
I didn't... Ow!
Lona dug her nails into his arm most unsubtly. Abin noted the move with interest. His wives were by no means docile, but they would never dare unman him so in front of a customer.
It ain't hurting anyone. He comes bringing flowers. You said yourself it's Leisha's choice.
Erny looked at her a long moment, then nodded. He took the box cover and slipped it back over Leisha's paper.
It's a heavy box. You want me to get a boy to carry it for you?
Please.
I think the boys are all busy, and I could use the stroll. I'll carry the paper.
Again, Abin was confused. In Krasia, it was expected that women do such labor, but from the way Erny goggled at his wife, Abin could tell he was shocked. As they walked down the isolated path from Ernie's shop, Abin turned to her.
I pray to ever my misunderstanding of your ways gave you and your husband no lasting offense.
Oh, we ain't much different from you. Only here, fathers approve marriages, but mothers arrange them. Ernie ain't blessing anything until the dower's set.
Abin stopped short, finally understanding.
Of course. I regret that my master's mother, Kajiva, is still in Avram's bounty with his wives. May I negotiate in her stead?
He has other wives?
Of course. Aman Jardir is the Shardramaka.
Tell him, if he's wise, he'll never so much as mention his other wives to my daughter. Girl gets jealous like a thundercloud.
I will be sure to advise him. Thank you. I assume your daughter is a virgin?
Of course she is.
Oh, please, take no offense. In Krasia, a man's first wife will inspect prospective brides personally. But if that is not your custom, your word will suffice.
It sure is the core in our custom to let anyone but husbands and herb gatherers look between our legs. So don't you or your master go getting any ideas about sampling the milk.
Of course.
Jardir paced his pavilion like an animal waiting for Abin to return.
What did he say? Is it done?
No. Mistress Leisha is more like Dama Ting than I thought. She has liberty to choose her own husband, though you must still pay a dower for her father's blessing.
I will pay any price.
So you have said. But I, your humble servant, have nevertheless begun negotiations to minimize the impact on your treasury.
So I may approach her directly?
Her father has given you permission to court her.
Shardir smiled, snatching up his spear and pausing to check himself in a silvered mirror.
What will you say to her?
I have no idea. But this is Evrim's will, so I trust that whatever I say will be the right thing.
I do not think it works that way, Aman.
Shardir looked at Aban, knowing all the words unspoken. Aban was much like the Parchin in that regard, polite, tolerant, and utterly disbelieving. Shardir looked at his old friend and felt great pity in his heart, understanding at last what it meant to be Kafit. Evrim did not speak to them. Aban might use the Creator's name in every other sentence, but had never truly heard his voice or felt the rapture of submitting to his divine will. Only Prophet spoke to Aban, and he would ever be its slave. But that, too, was part of Evrim's plan, for the Kafit saw things no other man did, things essential to Shardir if he was to win Sharakah. Shardir put a hand on Aban's shoulder, smiling sadly.
I know you do not, my friend, but if you do not trust in the Creator, hold faith in me.
Of course. But at the very least, avoid mention of your other wives. Her mother tells me that Mistress Leisha's jealousy is like a storm.
Shardir nodded, not surprised in the least that such a woman would know her own worth and expect other women to make way for her. It only made him want her more. Back in the hollow, Roger looked up to see the Krasian leader approaching, followed by his two bodyguards, Hasik and Shanjat. They wore their spears and shields on their backs, but while Shardir looked relaxed and serene, the warriors had the look of men surrounded by enemies, their hands flexed unconsciously for want of a spear. Shardir headed for Roger, and Garrett and a few cutters hurried to intercept. Shardir's bodyguards whirled to face them, spear and shield appearing in their hands instantly. The cutters lifted their own weapons at the sight, and it seemed a clash was inevitable. But Shardir turned, taking in Cutter and Sharam alike.
We are guests of Mistress Leisha. No blood will be shed between our peoples until she decrees otherwise.
Then tell your men to put their spears down.
His bodyguards sheathed their spears, though they kept their shields out.
Didn't say put them away, I said put them down.
Guests are not asked to leave their knives at the door, Garrett, son of Steve.
Garrett opened his mouth to reply, but Roger cut him off.
Of course, you are correct. Put up your axe.
Garrett's eyes widened. It was the first time Roger had ever publicly given Garrett an order, and it was one the cutter might well refuse to accept, for if he put up his weapon, every other cutter would do so as well. Their eyes met, and Garrett challenged him in that look, but Roger was a mummer, and his face easily imitated the harsh look of the warded man.
I'm not going to tell you again, Garrett.
Garrett nodded and stepped back, returning his axe to its harness and his blade to its sheath. The other cutters looked at him in surprise, but they did the same, taking comfort in their numbers. Roger turned to face Shardir.
Is there something I can help you with?
Indeed. I wish to speak with Mistress Leisha.
She's not in town.
I see. Can you tell me where I might find her?
The core we will.
Why?
She has given me a gift of incredible value in the cloak. I wish to bestow a gift of equal value upon her.
What gift?
That is a matter between Mistress Leisha and myself.
I'll take you to her, if you leave your warriors behind.
Of course. My intentions toward Mistress Leisha are honorable, and I will of course accept a chaperone while in her presence.
It seemed an odd choice of words, but Roger could not find further cause to argue. Soon they were walking the path to Leisha's cottage. Garrett insisted on coming along and glared at Shardir the whole way, though the Krasian leader seemed thankfully oblivious.
Why does the mistress not live in your village's wondrous great ward? I would think her too valuable to risk to the Alagai.
If all the Khor rose up tonight, you'd be safer in Leisha's cottage than anywhere else in the world.
Shardir found that hard to believe, but as they came close to the cottage, he found the path laid with a walkway of stone wards, each large enough to stand upon without marring it. Shardir stopped short, looking at the stones in amazement. He squatted, pressing against the stone with his hand.
Evrim's beard! It must have taken 1,000 slaves to carve these.
We ain't a bunch of filthy desert slavers like you.
Shardir's first impulse was to kill the man, but that was no way to impress the mistress. He embraced the insult instead and gave it no further thought, returning his focus to the path.
The wards were poured, not carved, made from a mixture of stone and water called crete, which hardens as it dries. Leisha cut them into the ground herself, and free men poured the stone.
These are combat wards, and linked.
Any demon that sets foot on this path might as well step into a sunbeam.
Jardir realized he had been arrogant and naive to scoff before. For all their savage ways, not even Sharikhora held the power of some of the northern woman's wardings. The yard was no less stunning, filled with more crete walkways that wove a complex ward net around the cottage and its environs. A large garden bloomed brightly, the herbs and flowers arranged in neat groupings, the lines forming yet more wards. Jardir couldn't recognize many of them, but he saw enough to know that these did far more than banish or kill Khorlings. Stronger than ever, he felt Everim's will thrumming within him. This woman was destined to be his bride. With her and Anevra behind him, what in the world could he not accomplish? Leisha listened to the comforting rhythm of Wanda chopping firewood as she prepared lunch. The simple task helped give her mind clarity as she went over the night's events and compared the men she had met with the tales of the refugees and Arlen's words of warning. It was not that she did not trust the accounts, but Leisha preferred to form her own opinions. Many of the refugees spoke hearsay and exaggeration, and Arlen's heart could be hard and unforgiving at times. Something had happened to him in Kreisha, some hurt done he could not forgive. But since he would not speak of it, Leisha could only guess as to what it was. Whatever else might be true of the Kreisians, they were warriors without equal. Leisha had seen that instantly as she watched them fight. The cutters were generally larger and more heavily muscled, but they moved with none of the precision that marked the Dal Sharam. The 50 camped in the clearing could cut a swath of destruction across the hollow before they were pulled down, and if the rest of Jardir's army had half their skill, the hollowers would stand little chance against them, even with all the secrets of fire she could muster. And so she had determined that they must not fight, if it could be avoided. It was one thing to kill demons, but every human life was precious. The books of the old world said mankind had once numbered in the billions, but how many remained after the return? A quarter million? The thought of the last men in the world fighting one another sickened her. Yet neither could she surrender. She would not spit on her hand and wet the hollow for the Kreisians. She had worked too hard to hold the hollowers together after the flux to assimilate the refugees from Ryzen and Lacton to just turn them over. If there was a way to negotiate a peace, she had to find it. The first meeting with the Kreisian leader had seemed to indicate that was a possibility. He was cultured and intelligent, nothing like the rabid animal the accounts had portrayed, and clearly held true to his beliefs, even if Leisha thought them brutal and cruel at times. She had looked deeply into his eyes, and there was no cruelty there. Like a stern father administering a needed spanking, Aman Jardir was doing what he thought best for humanity. Leisha paused in her work, realizing that the chopping outside had stopped. She looked up as the door opened and Wanda stood in the threshold.
Wash up and set the table. Lunch will be another few minutes.
Begging your pardon, mistress, but Roger and Garrett are here to see you.
Tell them to come in and set another pair of places at the table.
They're not alone.
Leisha set her knife on the cutting board and toweled her hands clean as she went to the door. Aman Jardir stood on her front porch, standing calmly and ignoring the way Garrett glared at him. He wore a fine white robe over his warrior blacks, matching the white turban his crown nestled within. Leisha's eyes danced across its wards, but she forced herself not to stare. She dropped her gaze to his eyes, but that was far worse, for they bored into her with such intensity that she felt as if he could see her very soul.
Forgive my appearing unannounced, mistress.
You just say the word and I'll haul him back to where he came from, Leisha.
Nonsense! Welcome. Wanda and I were just about to sit down to lunch. Would you care to join us?
I would be honored and delighted.
Jardir followed Leisha into the cottage, pausing to remove his sandals and leave them by the door. Leisha noted that even his feet were covered in ward scars. A kick from him would likely do as much to a Khorling as one by the warded man. The meal Mistress Leisha had prepared was a meatless stew served with fresh bread and cheese. Jardir bowed his head as she invoked a blessing over the food, and then everyone began eating at once. He began to lift his bowl to drink when he noticed the Greenlanders were leaving theirs on the table, using some sort of tool to bring the food to their lips. He glanced at his own setting and saw a similar utensil there, a wooden strip with a depression at the end. He looked at Leisha and mirrored her actions as he tasted the stew. It was delicious, with heavy vegetables he had never tasted. He began to eat more vigorously, using the thick Greenland bread to soak the last drops from his bowl, as he saw Garrett and Wanda do.
Exquisite. We do not have such food in Krasia.
There is much we could learn from each other, if we can find a way to live in peace.
Peace, mistress? There is no such thing on Allah. Not while the Alagai hold the night and men cower before them.
So the tales are true. You mean to conquer us and levy our people for Sharak Ka?
Why should I wish to conquer you? Your people are humble before the Creator, stand tall in the night, and shed blood in Alagai Sharak alongside my warriors. That makes you Evesian, though you know it not.
It don't! We ain't got nothing to do with you filthy—
Garrett Cutter! You'll keep a polite tongue at my table, or I'll give it such a dose of pepper you can't talk for a month.
Garrett recoiled, and again Jardir was amazed at the power of the woman. She made the Damating seem timid.
I apologize, Amon.
Leisha seemed taken aback when he smiled brightly at her.
What did I say?
My name.
I'm sorry, was that improper of me?
On the contrary. It sounds beautiful, coming from your lips.
With no veil to cover her cheeks, Jardir saw how her pale skin reddened at his words. He had never courted a woman before, but it seemed as if Evrim himself guided his words.
More than 3,000 years ago, my ancestor Khaji ruled this land from the southern sea to the frozen waste.
So the histories say. The 3,000 years is a long time, and accounts can become blurred.
Perhaps here in the north. But the temple of Sharik Hora in the desert spear has stood that long and more, and our records are sharp. Khaji did rule this land, sometimes by the spear, and sometimes by building alliance with its tribes and sealing it with blood. Khaji's blood is still strong here. Even your name, Deliverer's Hollow, honors him. You are not Chin to be conquered, but lost brethren to be welcomed into our fold. I name you Hollow Tribe, and accord you all the rights therein.
What rights?
Jardir reached into his robe, producing his personal Evesia. Its cover was of supple leather embossed with wards, and its pages were gilded in gold. A red ribbon hung ready to mark a page. The pages were soft and thin from daily use.
These rights.
He gave her the volume. Leisha took the book as one who knew its value, and he recalled she was a bookbinder's daughter as she turned it to examine the spine. She pushed her bowl aside and spread the cloth from her lap over the table before laying the book upon it and paging through.
It's beautiful. But much as I would love to learn the language, I'm afraid I can't understand a word.
She closed the book and held it out to him.
Keep it. What better book to help you learn? You may find its truths more in line with your own beliefs than you imagine.
Oh, I couldn't. This is too precious.
You give me a cloak that rivals Khaji's own, and you balk at a book of his truths? I can pen another.
You pen this yourself?
In my own blood during the years I studied it in Sharik Hora.
Leisha's eyes widened.
It is not gold or jewels, I understand. I would shower them upon you if I could, but I brought no such trinkets north. This is the most valuable thing I own, apart from my crown, spear, and new cloak. I hope you will accept it while Abba negotiates a proper dower with your mother.
Dower?
Of course. Your father gave me permission to court you, and your mother will see your prices met. Did they not tell you?
No, they correspond didn't.
Leisha rose to her feet so fast her chair skidded out behind her. In an instant, everyone was on their feet. Jardir felt a sudden flash of fear. He had given offense to her, but without understanding how, he could not even apologize.
Son of the core!
Garrett swung his meaty fist across the table at Jardir. Jardir caught Garrett's wrist and pivoted, pulling him clear across the table and flipping him onto his back. He put a single toe into Garrett's throat.
Your betters are speaking, Sharam. I have tolerated your constant rudeness out of respect to Mistress Leisha, but if you try to lay hands on me again, I will tear your arm off.
Everyone looked to Leisha for how to react.
Serves you right, Garrett Cutter. No one asked you to attack anyone in my home. Out with you. Roger and Wanda, too. You can all wait in the yard.
The core we will. If you think we're leaving you alone with this...
There was a bang and a flash at their feet, and they jumped in shock. Leisha said nothing, but her face was a storm cloud as she pointed at the door. Both were gone in an instant. Jardir released Garrett, and he, too, scurried out. Jardir turned to Leisha and bowed long and deep.
I apologize, mistress, though I do not understand why I have given distress. I have come to you and your family honorably, yet you act as if I tried to carry you off after stealing a well.
Leisha did not respond for a long time, and her anger was terrible to behold, such that Jardir had an urge to shield his eyes as if in a sandstorm. Slowly, she embraced the feeling, and her features grew calm once more.
I apologize as well. My distress is not directed at you, but at being the last to find out you had come courting.
Aben told your parents I would come immediately. I assume they sent you word.
I believe you. My mother has a history of trying to make such arrangements without my knowledge.
If you need time to consider, you need not answer now.
Yes. I mean, no. That is, I'm flattered, but I can't marry you.
Why not? Your mother says you are unspoken for, and I will meet any dower your family desires. Soon I will control all the Northland, and you with me. What husband could offer you more?
It doesn't matter. I barely know you. Dowers mean nothing to me. And frankly, I don't know that I want you controlling anything.
Come with me to Evrim's Bounty. Come see my people and what we are building. I will teach you our language as you asked, and you can come to know me and decide what I am worthy to control.
Leisha looked at him a long time, but Jardir waited patiently, knowing her answer was in Evera.
All right, but with proper chaperone and no decision until I am safely returned to the Hollow.
Of course. I swear it by Evrim.
Roger paced the yard, staring at Leisha's cottage. Garrod's clenched fists were like two hams, and even Wanda had fetched and strung her bow. Finally, the door opened, and Leisha followed Jardir out onto the porch.
Wanda, escort Mr. Jardir back to town. Garrod, you can finish cording the woodpile.
Garrod picked up Wanda's axe as she and Jardir headed down the path. Roger looked at Leisha, who nodded her head back to the door. She went inside, and he followed as she went right to Bruna's rocker and put on her shawl. Never a good sign.
How did he take your refusal?
He didn't. Told me to take my time and think it through. He's invited me back to Risen with him.
You can't go!
You have no more say over who I marry than my mother, Roger.
Are you saying you want to marry him? After a single tea and an awkward lunch?
Of course not. I have no intention of accepting his proposal.
Then why in the core would you deliver yourself into his hands?
There's an army at our doorstep, Roger. You don't see the value in looking at them through our own eyes? Counting tents and learning how their leader thinks?
Not at the cost of our own leader! Duke Rhinebeck doesn't personally go to Milne to see what Euchre's up to. He sends spies.
I don't have any spies.
You have over 1,000 Rhizonians who owe you their lives, many of whom left behind families. Surely a few could be persuaded to return home and keep their ears open.
I won't order people to put themselves at risk.
But you'll put yourself.
I don't think Amon would harm me.
2 days ago, he was the demon of the desert. Now he's Amon? What, do you just shine on any man who thinks he's the deliverer?
I don't want to hear any more of this, Roger.
I don't care what you want! You've heard how the Kreations treat women. No matter what that oily snake tells you, the moment you're out of range of the Hollower's bows, you'll be his property, and anyone with you will get a spear in the eye.
So you won't be coming with me?
Knight, haven't you heard anything I've been saying?
Every word, but I'm still going. If that's the kind of man Amon is, then war is inevitable, and it doesn't matter what we do. But if there's even a chance he meant what he said at the table, then there's a chance we can find a way to coexist without killing each other. And that's worth more to the world than the fate of Leisha Paper.
When do we leave?
The warded man's mood was black as Fort Milne receded in the distance. Any happiness he had felt upon leaving Reagan and Alyssa's manse was swept away by the meeting with Jake. The conversation played out over and over in his mind. All the words he should have said presented themselves too late and did little to dispel a nagging doubt that his friend was right. To take his mind away, he read through the book Ronald had given him, but that brought no comfort. Laid bare were Leisha's coveted secrets of fire, with metalwork diagrams to turn their force into tools of precision killing. Tools designed for killing not demons, but men.
Did the Corallings drive us to the brink of extinction?
Or did we do it to ourselves?
He caught the sight of a ruined keep off the side of the road as the sun began to set. One of Euchre's predecessors had kept a garrison there, but the keep had fallen to demons and never been rebuilt. Most messengers, convinced it was haunted, gave it a wide berth. A rusted gate hung bent and torn from twisted moorings, and great holes had been broken in the outer wall. He rode into the keep, stalking Twilight Dancer in a warded circle. He stripped to his loincloth, selecting a spear and bow. As darkness fell, the stinking mists began to seep up between the shattered stones of the courtyard. Corlings rose thickly in unwarded ruins, instinct telling them the odds were good prey might one day return. 50 men had died when the wards of this keep fell, likely killed by the very demons rising now. They deserved vengeance. The warded man waited until the demon spotted him and charged before lifting his bow. When he was out of arrows, he charged with spear and shield, eventually abandoning that as well and fighting with bare hands and feet. Lost in the killing frenzy, he thought of nothing else until at last, covered in demon ichor that sizzled on his wards, he found no more demons to kill. The sky began to lighten soon after, the few remaining corlings in the area fading into mist to flee the sun as it burned their taint away from the surface world. But then, the light reached him, and it was like fire on his skin. The glare stung his eyes, leaving him dizzy and nauseous, and his throat burned. Standing before it was agony. This had happened before. Leisha said it was the sunlight burning the excess magic away from him. But there was another part of him, a primal part, that knew the truth. The sun was rejecting him. He was becoming a demon and no longer belonged on the surface of the world. The core called to him, beckoning with offers of succor. The paths, like vents of magic coming up from the ground, were unmistakable to his warded eyes, and they all sang the same song. No sun would burn him in the core's embrace. The warded man started to dematerialize, slipping a bit of his essence down along a path, tasting it.
Just once, to probe for weakness, to see if the fight can be taken there.
It was a noble thought, if not entirely true. More likely, he would be destroyed.
World's better off without me anyway.
But before he could melt away, there was a pop and a flash of light as one of the smoldering bodies in the yard was caught in a sunbeam and burst into flame. He looked over at it, watching the bodies ignite one after another like festival flame work. Even as the corlings burned, his own pain lessened. The sun left him weakened, as it always did, but it did not destroy him.
Yet, but soon. Best give the brook its wards while you still can.
Landmarks began to appear as the warded man drew closer to Tibbet's brook, bringing his mind, lingering on thoughts of the core, back to the present. Here was the messenger cave where he had succored with Reagan and Kieran. There were the ruins where they had found him. Those, at least, were free of demons. A pack of night wolves had taken up residence there, and the warded man wisely gave them a wide berth. Even corlings thought twice before disturbing a pack of night wolves. Centuries of demons culling the smallest and weakest had left the few remaining predators in the wild formidable indeed. Named after their jet-black fur, adult night wolves could weigh 300 pounds, and a pack of them could take down even a wood demon if cornered. Next along the road came the small clearing where he had crippled one arm. The warded man had expected the place to be just as he had left it, a scorched and blackened ruin surrounding the clear spot where he had built his circle. But it had been better than 14 years, and that bleak place now bloomed with rich life, brighter even than its surroundings. It might be a good omen, if he believed in such things. In a far-flung hamlet such as Tibbet's Brook, a messenger or any stranger, even someone from Sunny Pasture the next town over, was a rare thing and apt to draw attention. When the warded man drew close to the town too early in the day, he pulled up and waited. Better to pass through the outskirts and town proper late in the day when folk were busy checking their wards rather than washing the road. He would arrive in town square close to dusk with just enough time to rent a room at Hog's Tavern. Come morning, all he would have to do was find the town speaker and give him or her a grimoire of battle wards, handing out a few weapons to those who wanted them in the process, and then leave before half the folk even knew he was there. He wondered if Celia still spoke for the town as she had when he was young. The first farm he passed was Mac Pasture's, but though he heard animals in the barn, he didn't see anyone. He reached Harl's not long after. The Tanner farm was deserted entirely. Recently, it seemed, since its wards were still intact and the fields unburned. But the livestock was gone, and the fields in disarray as if they had not been properly tended in some time. There was no sign of a demon attack. He wondered what could have happened. Harl's farm had special meaning for him. For 11 years, Harl's farm was the farthest he had ever gotten from home. But more than that, it was where he had kissed Benny and Renna the night before his mother died. It was ironic. He could no longer remember his mother's face, but he remembered everything about those kisses. The way his teeth had clinked clumsily with Benny's, and they had both recoiled in shock. The softness and warmth of Renna's mouth, the taste of her breath. It had been a long time since he had thought of Renna Tanner. Their fathers had promised them to each other, and if Arlen had not run away, they would likely be married now, raising children and tending Jeff's farm. He wondered what had become of her. Things only grew stranger as he went on. There was no reason for him to have taken any caution with his approach, because he didn't see a single soul on his way through the brook. Every home was locked up tight. He mentally checked the date, but it was too early for the summer solstice festival. They must have been summoned by the Great Horn. The Great Horn was in town square and was blown when there was an attack, giving directions so that those closest could come and help search for survivors and rebuild if possible. Folk would lock up their livestock and leave for that, sometimes even overnight. The warded man knew he had judged his people harshly when he left home. They were no different from the folk of Cutter's Hollow or any other of dozens of hamlets he had seen. Brook folk might not stand up to the Corlings like Crasians, but they resisted in their own way, coming together time and again to reaffirm their bonds to one another. When they bickered, it was over petty things. No one in the brook would allow a neighbor to go hungry or be left without succor, as happened so often in the cities. The warded man searched the sky, but there was no sign of smoke, the surest indicator of attack. He strained his ears, but there was nothing to guide him, and after some casting about, he headed on down the road to town square. There would be folk there who could tell him about the... It was nearly dark as he approached town square, and the buzz of hundreds of people came to his ears. He relaxed, realizing his fears were unfounded, and wondered what occasion could have drawn everyone in the brook to spend a night in town. Had one of Hogg's daughters finally married? The streets were clear, but it seemed all the brook had gathered. Every porch and doorway and window facing the square was packed full of people. Some, like the watches, had even drawn their own circles, standing apart from the others and clutching their cannons deep in prayer. It was a sharp contrast with the folk from Boggins Hill, clutching only one another as they wept. He caught sight of Renna's sister Benny among them, holding tight to Lucas Boggan. He followed their gaze to the square's center, where a beautiful young woman was bound to a stake in the ground, and the sun was setting. It was only an instant before the warded man recognized Renna Tanner. Perhaps it was because she had been on his mind, or that he had just seen her sister, but Renna's round face, even after so long, was unmistakable, as was the long brown hair that fell nearly to her waist. She hung limply, held up more by the ropes wrapped around her arms and chest than her own strength. Her eyes were open, but they stared blankly, focused on nothing.
What in the core is going on?
The giant stallion leapt forward into the square, digging great divots in the grass as he pranced before the shocked crowd. The square was lit with a dim, flickering glow from torches and lanterns, but above, the sky was a deep purple. The Corlings would rise in seconds. He leapt from the horse's back, rushing to the stake to undo Renna's bonds. An old man strode out to him, waving a large hunting knife with a stained blade. The warded man's sharp nostrils caught the scent of dried blood as he recognized Radek Lawry, the speaker from Fishing Hole.
This ain't your affair, messenger. That girl killed my kin, as well as her own die, and we aim to see her court for it.
The warded man glanced at Renna in shock, and like a slap in the face, it all came back to him. The marriage game she and Benny had wanted to play with him in the hayloft. Games they said they learned from watching Elaine with their father. Elaine's secret, pleading words to Jeff, begging him to take her away. The grunting from Harl's room deep in the night. The memories flooded back, but this time he saw them as a grown man and not a naive boy. Horror struck him, followed quickly by anger. He reached out faster than Radek could react, catching the man's wrist in a Sharasak twist that flipped him to the ground, even as the knife came free from his hands.
If Renna Tanner killed her die, then I tell you he had it coming.
He moved to cut Renna's bonds, but several fishers led by Garrick charged him with their thin spears. He stuck the bloody knife in the stake and turned to meet them. To call it a fight would have been overly kind to the fishers.
Ain't nobody getting cored while I'm around. I'm taking her, and there ain't a correspond thing you can do about it.
Arlen's eyes widened in disbelief. Georgie Watch stood there, looking much as he had the last time the warded man had seen him, though that had been over 16 years gone, and Georgie in his 90s then.
Nothing we can do, maybe, but reckon we're not the ones you need to contend with, boy. The plague take you both.
The warded man followed the stick and saw he was right. Mist was rising throughout the square, and already some corelings were solidifying. The fishers on the ground scrambled back behind the wards. Georgie Watch had a grim smile on his face, one of righteous satisfaction, but the warded man didn't flinch. Instead, he pulled off his hood and met the South Watch tender's eyes.
I've contended with worse, old man.
He stripped off his robe as well. As always, the first to come were the flame demons. One leapt at Renna, but the warded man caught its tail, hurling it across the square. A wood demon formed next, charging Twilight Dancer, but the stallion reared and trampled it. The warded man pivoted in time to grab the diving wind demon and turn its momentum against it, throwing it hard to the ground and crushing its throat with a stomp of his foot. Two more wood demons came at him, and he kicked the first in the stomach, knocking it back before grappling with the other. He caught one of its arms in a Sharasak hold and pulled with all his strength, tearing the demon's arm clear off. This he threw at Georgie Watch, though the limb bounced off the wards of the South Watch tender's circle. Some people even fell to their knees, but the warded man only scowled.
Ain't here to deliver anyone that would put a girl out into the night!
Arlen turned to Renna, pulling the knife free from the stake and slashing through her bonds. She collapsed into his arms, and their eyes met for just a moment. Focus returned to Renna's gaze, and she shook her head as if to clear it. He lifted her up onto Twilight Dancer's back.
That witch killed my son.
The warded man turned, remembering all too clearly the many beatings he'd suffered at Kobe Fisher's hands as a child.
Your son was a bully, and never worth a Carling's piss.
He looked out over the crowd, scanning the terrified faces. He saw his father there clutching Elaine Tanner and felt another surge of anger. Nothing had changed if Jeff could stand there and watch Renna staked, knowing what they both did of Harl.
I came to teach you all to fight the Corlings, but I see Tibbetts Brook still only raises cowards and fools.
He turned to ride off, but something gnawed at him, and he looked back, giving the crowd one last glance, one last chance.
Any man, woman, or child who would rather kill Corlings than feed them their neighbor, meet me here at dusk tomorrow. If not, correspond the lot of you.
Jeff met his eyes then, though there was no recognition in his gaze.
Renna Tanner is my kin. Sucker at my farm up the north road. Renna knows the way.
The warded man needed no direction to Jeff's farm, but he nodded, turning Twilight Dancer north.
Here now, you can't go sheltering that murdering witch, Jeff Bales. The council voted.
Then it's best I ain't on the council, because the night is my witness. You or anyone else comes to my farm looking for her, there'll be more bloodshed and to spare.
Huh.
The warded man kicked Twilight Dancer into a gallop out of the square and headed up the road to his father's farm. Renna was silent the whole ride, resting against him and clinging to his robes. A few demons came at them, but Twilight Dancer dodged and put on speed, quickly leaving them behind. His father's farm was much as he remembered it, though an addition had been built onto the back of the house. Some of the ward posts in the barley field were still those he had carved himself, coated in fresh lacquer many times over the years. Jeff maintained his wards religiously, a habit he had instilled in his son that had saved Arlen's life many times since and defined much of the course of his life. Drawn to the house, a great many corelings were in the yard testing the wards. The warded man shot two to clear the way to the barn, and once safe behind its wards, he stabled Twilight Dancer and stood in the doorway, picking off the others one by one with his bow. Soon, the way was clear, and he escorted Renna to the house proper. The warded man was shaking as he deposited Renna in the common room and lit the lanterns, kindling a fire in the hearth. Everything about the place was so familiar, it made his heart ache. It even smelled the same. He half expected his mother to come out of the cold room and tell him to wash for supper. He went over to Renna, who was sitting right where he left her, playing with her skirts.
You all right?
And sure I'll ever be all right again.
Yeah, I know the feeling. You hungry?
When she nodded, he went to the cold room, unsurprised to find it laid out just as he recalled. There was smoked ham and fresh vegetables and bread in the bread box. He took everything to the chopping block and filled a pot from the water barrel. He soon had a stew simmering over the fire, filling the house with its aroma. Renna said little as they ate, and he found himself staring at her, wishing he knew what words could put life back in her eyes.
Good stew? There's more if you like.
She nodded, and he fetched the pot from the fire, ladling her another helping.
Thanks. I feel like I haven't eaten days. I haven't really. I've been hungry.
You had a rough week, I imagine.
You killed those demons. Killed them with your bare hands.
That's right.
Why?
I need a reason to kill demons.
But they told you what I'd done. And he's right. None of this would have happened. I just minded my dad. Maybe I deserve to be cored.
You listen to me, Renna Tanner. Your dad didn't deserve minding. I know what he'd done to you and your sisters out on that farm. That kind of man ain't worth no mind at all. It's him that brought these troubles about, not you. And I ain't never been you.
When she just stared at him, he shook her.
You hear me?
For a moment more, Renna just stared. And then slowly she nodded. And then again, more decisively.
Wasn't right. What he'd done to us.
That's undersaid.
And poor Kobe never done nothing wrong. He wasn't no bully. At least not that I ever saw. All he ever wanted was to marry me proper. And Dad?
Killed him for it.
Man like that ain't much more than a demon himself.
And you got to fight demons, Renna Tanner. It's the only way to live with your head held high. Can't trust no one else to do what you won't do for yourself.
Renna was curled up by the fire, fast asleep, when Jeff's cart pulled into the yard early the next morning. The warded man watched through the window, swallowing a lump in his throat as four children hopped down from the back of the cart, brothers and sisters he had never known. They were followed off the cart by tough old Noreen and Elaine. The warded man had shined on Elaine when he was young, and she was still beautiful now, but seeing his father help her down from the front seat, the way he used to do for his mother, gnawed at him. He didn't blame Elaine for wanting to escape Harald's, not anymore at least, but that made it no easier to see how quickly she had taken his mother's place. He looked up the road, but there was no sign of anyone else following. He opened the door and went out to meet them. The children pulled up short, staring as he walked over to Jeff.
She's asleep by the fire.
Thank you, messenger.
I'll hold you to your promise to protect her from any looking to do her harm.
I will.
The warded man's eyes narrowed. Jeff was full of sincere-sounding promises, ones he meant full well, yet when the time came for action, he was apt to fail.
I'll fetch my horse and go.
Wait, please.
Jeff caught his arm. The warded man looked at the offending hand, and Jeff snatched it quickly away.
We'd like it if you stayed for breakfast. Least we can do. Whole town might be at the square come evening, like you said. You can take your ease here till then.
The warded man looked at him, wanting to be gone from the place, but a part of him longed to meet his siblings, and his stomach rumbled at the thought of a proper brook breakfast. Such things had meant little to him when he was a child, but now they were cherished memories.
Reckon I can set a spell.
He allowed himself to be escorted back inside as the children ran to their chores and Noreen and Elaine headed to the cold room.
This here's Jeff Young.
Jeff introduced his oldest son when they were gathered around the breakfast table. The boy nodded at him, but mostly stared at his tattooed hands and tried to peek into the shadows of his hood.
Next to him is Jenny Taylor. They've been promised near 2 seasons. At the end are our youngest, Sylvie and Charlie.
Seated opposite the children, next to Renna and Noreen, the warded man scoffed at the names, those of his lost mother and uncle.
You have beautiful children.
Tender Harold says you're the deliverer. Come again.
Well, I ain't. Just a messenger, come to spread a good word.
Messengers all like you now, then? All warded up?
I'm one of a kind like that, but I'm just a man all the same. Didn't come to deliver anyone.
You sure did for our Renna. Can't thank you enough for that.
Shouldn't have had to.
You're right at that. Sometimes when a body's in the crowd, and the crowd has its say...
Stop making excuses, Jeff Bales. Man's right. What do we got in this world except kith and kin? Ain't nothing should keep us from standing by him.
The warded man looked at her. This wasn't the Noreen he remembered, the one who had stood on the porch the night his mother was cored, stood and done nothing except try to keep Arlen from going to her aid. He nodded, his eyes flicking back to meet Jeff's.
She's right. You got to stand up to those that would harm you and yours.
You sound like my son.
Say again.
Me?
Jeff shook his head at his oldest son.
Your elder. Had another son, named Arnold, years back. Promised to rent her there, in fact. Arnold's man was Cord, and he ran off. Always asking about free cities, Arnold was. I'd like to think he might have made it there.
But you have this beautiful family now.
I thank the Creator for him every day. But that don't mean I ain't carrying a weight for those gone before.
After breakfast, the warded man went out to the stables to check on Twilight Dancer, more to escape for a moment than for any need. He had just started to brush the horse down when the barn door opened and Renna came in. She cut an apple and held the halves out for Twilight Dancer to eat, stroking the stallion's flanks when she was done.
It was night when I come running here a few days ago. Demons would have got me if Jeff hadn't crossed the wards and hit one with his axe.
Honest word?
You're not gonna tell him, are you?
Tell him what?
That you're his son. That you're alive and well and you forgive him. He's waited so long. Why are you still punishing him when I can see forgiveness in your eyes?
You know who I am?
Of course I know. It's stupid, no matter what everyone thinks. How would you have known about my dad and what he'd done? You weren't Arlen Bales. How would you know Kobe was a bully or which farm was Jeff's? Not you strolled around the cupboards like it was still your house.
Didn't mean for anyone to know.
The warded man suddenly realized that his Brook accent, which he'd dropped while living in Milne, had returned. It was an old messenger's trick to put folk in the hamlets at ease, shifting accent to match theirs. He had done it 100 times, but this time was different. Like he'd been doing the trick since he left and was finally speaking in his own voice again. Renna kicked him hard in the shin.
Ow!
That's for thinking I didn't know and not saying anything.
Renna shoved him so hard he fell into the pile of hay at the back of the stall.
14 summers I waited for you. Always thought you'd come back for me. We was promised. But you didn't come back for me at all, did you? Not even now. You was just gonna stop in and leave me thinking no one knew.
She kicked at him again, and he scrambled quickly to his feet, moving to put Twilight Dancer between them. She was right, of course. The same as his visit to Milne, he had thought he could look in on his old life without touching it, like removing a bandage to see if the wound underneath had healed. But truer was he had left those wounds to fester, and it was time they were bled.
5 minutes talk between our dads don't make us promised, Ren.
I asked my dad to talk to Jeff. I told you we was promised then, and I said the words on the porch at sunset the day you left. That makes it so.
Saying something at sunset doesn't make it so. I never promised to you, Renna. Everyone got to say that night but me.
Maybe you didn't, but I did. It was the only thing I ever done that was really mine, and I ain't gonna take it back. I knew it when we kissed that it was meant to be.
But you'd have married Kobe Fisher, who used to beat on me with his friends.
Well, you fixed him for that. Kobe was always nice to me. I didn't even know you were alive, and I needed to get away.
I know, Ren. I didn't mean it like that. Don't blame you for doing what you did. Just meant that nothing's meant to be. We all just go through life doing what we think's best.
I want to go with you when you leave. That's what I think's best.
You know what that means, Ren? I don't just hide behind a circle when the sun sets. It ain't a safe life.
Like I'm safe here? Even if they don't stake me again as soon as you leave, who I got to turn to now? Who that weren't willing to stand by and watch me get cord?
He looked at her a long time, trying to find the words to refuse her. The Fishers were no different from any bullies. He would cow them come nightfall if he hadn't already. Renna would be safe in the brook. She deserved to be safe. But was simply safety enough? It wasn't for him, so who was he to say it was for her? He'd always looked with derision on those who spent their lives in fear of the night. Being around Renna was like salt in the wound, a reminder of everything he had given up when he began warding his flesh. It was hard enough around those who never knew him before. Renna made him feel like he was still 11 years old. But she needed him, and that kept the call of the Corps away. Today was the first dawn he had looked forward to since Milne. In his heart, the warded man knew he would never survive if he tried to enter the demon world, but seeing his own people put Renna out at night made him want to leave humanity behind forever. If he left Tibbetts Brook alone, he might.
All right. So long as you keep the pace. You slow me down and I'll leave you at the first town we come to.
Retta looked around the barn, spotting a beam of sunlight streaming in through the hayloft doors above. She stepped carefully into the sunlight and met his eyes.
I ain't gonna slow you.
She drew Harl's knife.
Son is my witness.
You clutch that knife like it could help you against a Korling. Let me ward it for you.
Retta blinked, looking at the knife, then held it out. He reached for it, but she drew it back suddenly, clutching it protectively.
Knife's one of the only things in the world that's mine. Like to ward it myself, if you'll teach me.
The warded man looked at her doubtfully, remembering her poor warding when they were children. Retta noted the look and scowled.
I ain't 9 years old anymore, Arlen Bales. Been warding my property nigh 10 years now, and ain't no demon ever got past, so you quit looking down. Reckon I can draw a ripping circle or a heat ward as good as you.
Sorry. The warders in the free cities treated me the same way when I left the brook. I forgot how insulting it was.
Retta went over to where his gear was stored and pulled a warded knife from a sheath on his saddle.
Here, what's this one do?
Retta pointed to the single ward at the tip.
Why's the rest of the edge just a repeat of this other ward, only rotated? How's it form a net without connectors?
The warded man pointed to the tip.
This is a piercing ward to break armor. Those on the side are cutting wards to let the blade slide in once the armor's broken. Cutting wards are self-linking if you rotate them proper.
Uh-huh. And these?
Arlen couldn't help but smile. After supper, Jeff hitched his cart and the whole family climbed in to head to town square. Retta rode with the warded man seated behind him on Twilight Dancer. They arrived scant minutes before sunset. If the square had been packed the day before, it was near bursting now. Everyone looked up when they rode in, ignoring Jeff's family entirely as they stared at the hooded stranger on his enormous warded stallion and the girl who rode behind him. The crowd parted as the warded man rode through to the center of the square. Turning Twilight Dancer back and forth a few times so all could see them, he reached up and pulled his hood down.
I came from the free cities to teach the good people of Tibbetts Brook to kill demons. But so far, I've seen no good people. Good people do not feed helpless girls to Korlings. Good people do not stand by while someone is cored.
She weren't no helpless girl, messenger.
Radic Laurie came to the fore of those from Fishing Hole.
She's a cold killer, and the council voted to have her staked for it.
Aye, they did. And none stood up against them for it.
Folk trust in their speakers.
That true? You folks trust your speakers? Then I reckon it's your speakers I'll test.
Arlen leapt down from a horse, and from the harnesses on Twilight Dancer's saddle, selected 10 light spears he stuck point down to stand quivering in the dirt.
Every man or woman of the town council who stands with me and fights tonight, or their heir if they're killed, will get a battle-warded spear, and the secrets of combat warding so they can make their own.
Mac Pasture stepped forward.
Can we have some time to think on it? Don't care to be hasty.
Of course. I'd say you have 10 minutes. By this time tomorrow, I intend to be back on the road to the free cities.
Celia Barron came out of the crowd.
You expect us, the Brooks elders, to stand in the naked night with naught but them spears?
It's a sight more than you gave Retta Tanner.
Not all of us voted her out, messenger.
You let it happen. All the same.
Ain't no one above the law. When the council voted, we had to put the town first, no matter how we felt.
The core with your law, if it says to throw your neighbor to the night. You want to put town first? Come out here and show you can get as you give. Elsewise, I'll take my spears and go.
Celia's eyes narrowed, and then she picked up her skirt, striding firmly into the square, taking up one of the spears. She was followed immediately by Tender Harrell and Brian Broadshoulders. The giant cutter took up his spear with a hungry look in his eyes.
Anyone else have a question?
Reckon I do.
Ask, and I'll answer with honest word, Georgie Watch.
How are we to know you're really the deliverer?
Like I said, Tender, I ain't. Just a messenger.
A messenger of whom?
No patron for this message. Found the wards in a ruin of the old world and took it upon myself to spread them to all the good folk so we could start fighting back.
The plague cannot end without the coming of the deliverer.
But the warded man simply shrugged, handing Georgie a warded spear.
Well, could be it's you. Kill a demon and find out.
Georgie dropped his walking stick and took the weapon, a hard glint in his eyes.
Seen 100 years and more of the plague. Seen everyone I know pass on, even my own grandkin. Always wondered why it was Creator kept me alive so long when he called so many others to his side. Reckon it was on account of me having something left to do.
They say in Fort Crazier that a man can't get to heaven unless he takes a Corlin with him.
Wise folk.
Rusko Hogg stomped into the square next, rolling his sleeves up thick and meaty arms. He grabbed a spear of his own. There was movement from the Marsh contingent, where Corin Marsh sat in a hard-backed chair.
My Dar can't even stand without his cane. Let me fight for him.
Spear's as good a cane as any for a man who thinks he can sit in the council and play Creator.
The warded man ignored the shouts, keeping his eyes on Corin, daring him to step forward. The aged Marsh speaker scowled, but he stood up from his chair and hobbled slowly over to take a spear. He left his cane on the ground beside Georgie's walking stick. The warded man's eyes came to meet a Boggin as she broke an embrace with her son and strode out of the cluster from Boggin's Hill. She looked to Colleen as she passed, but the herb gatherer shook her head.
I got sick to tend, not to mention any of you lucky enough to make it back out of there.
Mac Pasture shook his head as well.
Ain't fool enough to step over them wards. Got folk and livestock depending on me. Didn't come here to be cored.
Let us call a new speaker if this one ain't got the sack.
Why should I? None of you had the sack to stand up for Rena Tanner.
That ain't true.
The warded man turned to Ren in surprise. She met his eyes with a hard look.
Jeff Bales stood in front of a flame demon for me not 5 nights hence.
All eyes turned to Jeff, who shrank under the glare. The warded man felt like Rena had kicked him in the teeth, but his father was under the test now, and he wanted to know the result more than any.
That honest word, Bales. You fight a demon in your yard?
Jeff looked at the ground a long time, then glanced to his children. He seemed to draw strength from the sight, and his back straightened.
Ah, you make Jeff Bales speaker before sundown, and I'll let him stand.
The roar of approval was immediate, and Noreen gave Jeff a shove to get him walking. The warded man turned at last to Radic Lowry.
Ain't no proof them spears even work.
You come out on trust, or you don't come out.
Don't know you, messenger. Don't know where you're from or what you believe. Don't know nothing but what you say, and what you say is fishers get no justice. So you'll forgive me if I don't entirely trust your word.
Reddick strode into the square and looked out at not just the fishers, but other brook folk as well.
I forgive you.
Harlan pointed to the mist beginning to rise at the speaker's feet.
Now I advise you to either pick up a spear or head back to your wards.
Reddick Lowry scampered back to the fisher's wards as fast as his old legs would carry him. The warded man turned to regard the speakers who had stepped forward. They gripped their spears awkwardly, used to holding tools and not weapons. But there was a surprising lack of fear. Except for Jeff, who looked white as a snow demon's scales, they seemed at peace. Speakers didn't question decisions once they were made.
The demons are most vulnerable now, when they're half-formed, if you're quick.
Before he even finished speaking, Hogg strode over to a solidifying wood demon. Hogg yanked the spear back out, letting the now solid demon drop to the ground.
Oh, I could get used to that feeling.
Celia moved next, choosing a flame demon that was beginning to take form. Corin did the same, stabbing at another forming flame demon the way he might try to spear a frog in the marsh. But his leg buckled, and he threw himself off balance, missing the demon completely. Kevin Marsh ran out into the square. He grabbed one of the two spears still sticking in the dirt and swung it like an axe.
Weren't gonna just let my dad get cored.
The warded man bowed to him.
Good man.
Jeff hurried to stab at a nearby solid flame demon, but he was not quick enough, and it spat flame at him. Jeff held the spear out diagonally as if to block the fire. The shaft of Jeff's spear flared, and the flame was turned into nothing more than a cool breeze. Jeff recovered quickly. A wood demon swept a branch-like arm at him, but the warded man caught its wrist and turned its force against it, flipping it onto its back in front of Georgie Marsh. Tender Harrell and Brian Broadshoulders escorted Mita to her kill, standing ready with their spears in case it should recover itself before she could strike her blow. They needn't have worried. Another wood demon formed, and Brian and Harrell struck it together. The demons were all solid now. A fair number had formed in the square, but more than half were dead, and the wardstones of the crowd prevented reinforcements from coming.
Group close! Spears out ahead of you!
They did as they were told and cornered two wind demons sharing the kills. The warded man calmly guided them around the square, directing kills, ready to step in if needed. But he was not called upon to act again, and the remaining demons were quickly dispatched. The speakers looked around, gripping their spears quite differently now.
Oh, didn't feel so strong in 20 years when I used to split my own firewood.
The warded man looked out at the gathered crowd.
Your elders done it! You remember that the next time there's a demon in your yard!
Ain't no demons left in the square. We done our part of the bargain, so the second part of your payment's due.
Now?
I've a stack of blank vellum we can fill in my back room.
All right.
Hogg bowed and gestured toward his store. The other speakers and the warded man began to head that way, but Hogg turned to face the crowd.
Come morning. I'll be taking orders for warded spears at the general store and hiring folk with a steady warden hand to make them. First come, first served.
Renna sat in a corner as Arlen taught the council combat warding in Hogg's back room. Daisy and Katrin were in and out serving fresh pots of coffee. They watched Renna suspiciously, as if expecting her to suddenly leap up and attack them with Harl's knife, which lay on the table beside her. She'd painted wards on the blade in a neat hand, and now worked with one of Arlen's fine etching tools, slowly imprinting them onto the metal. Arlen came by once, trying to see her work, but she turned away from him. She was done asking for help. Dawn's light was creeping through the cracks in the shutters by the time the speakers finished, each standing up with a roll of vellum in their hands. Arlen spoke with Hogg a few moments longer, then came over to her.
You all right?
Just tired.
Well, might be you can catch a couple hours sleep back at the farm while Hogg readies the supplies we need to head back. The old crook had the stones to charge for him, even after I handed him the means to make a fortune.
Don't know why you expect it different.
Leaving town then?
Celia spoke as they went for the door.
You turn the brook on its head, and then ride off before you see what comes of it?
Town was already on its head when I arrived. Reckon I set it aright.
Maybe you did it then. What news from the Free Cities? Are they all warding weapons and killing Corlins?
The Free Cities ain't your concern right now. When the brook is free of demons, you can look to the wider world.
Georgie Watch thumped his new spear on the floor.
Tend your own field before you look to your neighbors.
Arlen turned to Rusko Hogg.
I want copies made and sent to the speakers of Sunny Pasture.
Well, that won't be cheap. The vellum alone will cost nearly 20 credits, plus having them penned.
Arlen cut him off, holding up a heavy gold coin. Hogg's eyes bulged at the size and thickness of it.
If they don't get their wards, I'll hear of it, and I'll make vellum out of your hide.
Renna saw Hogg's ruddy complexion pale, and even though he was larger by far, he shrank back from Arlen's stare and swallowed hard.
2 weeks. Honest word.
Learn to bully a bit yourself.
The warded man didn't look at her, and his hood was still up. For a moment, she thought he might not have heard.
Got whole lessons on it during my messenger training.
Hogg opened the doors to the store, and there was a huge crowd waiting on the steps.
Back! Clear path for the speakers! Ain't gonna take a single order until you do!
Radek Lowry was waiting at the front of the crowd as Renna descended the steps of Hogg's porch.
This ain't over, Renna Tanner. Can't hide up at Jeff's farm forever.
Ain't hiding from no one no more. I'm leaving this correspond town and ain't never coming back.
Radek opened his mouth to reply, but Arlen raised a warded finger at him and he fell silent, glaring at them as Arlen laced his hands into a step to help her onto Twilight Dancer's back. He pulled a small book from his saddlebag, turning and scanning the crowd. Spotting Colleen Trigg, he strode over to her.
Everything I know about treating demon wound is in there. You're smart. You'll learn it and pass it on.
Colleen's eyes were wide, but she nodded. Arlen leapt into the saddle. Arlen left Jeff's farm around noon to fetch the promised supplies from Hogg.
Pack your things. We'll leave as soon as I get back.
Renna nodded and watched him go. She had nothing to pack, not even back at Harl's farm. Only Celia's dress on her back, her father's knife at her waist, and the brookstone necklace Kobe had given her, still looped twice around her neck. She wished she had something to offer Arlen in exchange for taking her, but she had nothing but herself. Kobe had thought it enough, but she doubted Arlen would be so easily paid. Elaine came out onto the porch to stand next to her as she sat etching her father's blade.
Brought something to eat on your trip. Hog cooks so food'll keep more than he does for taste. His bacon's more smoke than meat.
Thanks.
You don't have to go, Ren.
Yes, I do.
That messenger's a hard man, Renna. We don't know nothing about him other than he kills demons. Could be worse than Dal, Longsight. You're safer here with us. After last night, folks'll hold their peace with you.
Hold their peace? Reckon that makes it sunny. They tried to stake me.
So you're gonna just run off with some stranger crazy enough to scar himself with wards?
If that ain't the night calling it dark. You didn't love Jeff Bales when you ran away with him, Laney. Didn't know anything other than he was the sort would take a new wife when the old one wasn't even cold.
Elaine slapped Rana, but she didn't flinch, her eyes hard, and it was Elaine who recoiled.
Difference between us, Laney, is I ain't running away. I'm running too.
Running too?
Tippett's Brook ain't a place I want to live, where folk let a man like Dad do as he will and put me out into the night. I don't know what the free cities are like, but they gotta be better than here. I killed Dad, Laney. I did. Killed that son of the core good. He needed killing, not just for what he'd done, but what he would have done I hadn't. Dad never paid for anything an ounce of cruelty could take.
Renna!
You had any stones, you'd have done it yourself long since when Benny and I were still youngins.
Elaine's eyes widened, but she said nothing, and Renna couldn't tell if it was guilt or shock. Renna turned away, looking out at the yard.
I don't blame you. I'd had stones, I'd have done it myself the night he stuck me. But I didn't, because I was scared.
She turned back to meet Elaine's eyes.
But I ain't scared no more, Laney. Not of Radic Lowry or Garrick Fisher, and not of this messenger. I expect he's a good man. But he turns out like that, I'll do the world a favor and kill him too. Sure as the sun rises.
The warded man came riding fast into the yard a couple of hours later. Renna was waiting on the porch and came out to him as Twilight Dancer pranced and kicked up dust in the yard.
Lots wasting.
You're not even gonna say goodbye?
Lots about to get real interesting in the brook. Best no one have cause to think I got anything more to do with Jeff and Laney Bales than stealing you.
Your dad deserves better than you've given him.
Ain't gonna tell him who I am.
At least tell him his son ain't dead. Or you got no call judging which folk are good enough for your wards and which ain't.
The warded man scowled, but he dismounted. Renna was right, and he knew it, much as he hated to admit it.
We're off!
Everyone came running from all over the yard. The warded man looked at his father and nodded away from the press. Jeff followed.
Rode caravan with an Arlen Bales in the Messenger's Guild. Might have been your son. Bales' name is common everywhere, but Arlen not so much.
Honest word?
It was years ago, but I recall he worked for Cobb's Warding Company, Fort Milne. Might be you can still get word of him there.
Jeff reached out, grabbed one of the warded man's hands in both of his own.
Sunshine on you, messenger.
The warded man nodded and pulled away, going over to Renna.
Lots wasting.
She nodded this time and let him lift her into Twilight Dancer's saddle. He climbed in ahead of her, and she held his waist as he trotted to the road and turned north.
Ain't the road to the Free City south?
No shortcut. Faster, and we avoid the town altogether.
Twilight Dancer opened his stride, and they flew up the road. The wind whipped through Renna's hair. True to his word, Arlen remembered every path and pasture of the local farms in the north of Tibbetts Brook. Before Renna knew it, they were on the main road out of town, past even Mac Pasture's farm. They rode hard for the rest of the day and were well on the way to the Free Cities when he finally pulled up with barely a quarter hour before sunset.
Ain't we cutting it close?
Got time enough to set the circles. I was alone, I might not stop at all.
Then don't. Promised I wasn't gonna slow you.
He ignored her, dismounting and pulling two portable circles from the saddlebags. He threw one over Twilight Dancer and the other in a small clearing, quickly aligning the wards. Renna swallowed, but she did not protest. Stiffening, she clutched her knife and looked around, waiting for the demon mist to rise. Arlen glanced up and noticed her discomfort. He straightened from his work, going over and rummaging through his saddlebags.
Ah, there it is.
Arlen opened a cloak and threw it over Renna's shoulders. He tied it in place and put up the hood. The cloth against her cheek was impossibly soft, like a kitten's fur. Used to rough homespun, The fabric was finer than she imagined possible. She looked down. There were wards sewn into the fabric with stitches impossibly small. Hundreds of them.
That's a cloak of Unside. So long as you keep wrapped in it, no demon will even know you're there.
Honest word?
Swear by the sun.
Arlen bent back to the circles and quickly had them ready, while she laid a fire pit and took out Elaine's basket. They sat together a time, sharing cold meat pies and ham, fresh vegetables, bread and cheese. Corlings threw themselves at the wards occasionally, but Renna trusted in Arlen's warding and paid them no mind.
You sit saddle awkward in that big dress.
Huh?
I can't give Dancer his full head with you not seated right.
He goes even faster?
Much.
She leaned over to him, putting her arms around his shoulders.
If you're looking to get me out of my dress, Arlen Bales, just say so.
She smiled, but Arlen recoiled, putting his hands on her waist and lifting her off him like she might lift Mrs. Scratch from her lap. He was on his feet immediately.
I didn't bring you for that, Ren.
You ain't taking advantage.
It ain't about that.
Arlen took a sewing kit out of his saddlebag. He threw it to her, turning away.
Divide your skirts and do it quick. We have business yet tonight.
Business?
You're killing a demon by dawn, or I'm dropping you in the next town.
Done.
Renna had removed her petticoat and shortened her skirt, slitting it high on each side. Arlen looked up from where he sat, warding an arrow at the edge of the circle, and his eyes danced across her bared thighs.
Like what you see? Come into the firelight, you want a better look.
Arlen looked at his hand for a moment, slowly rubbing his warded fingers together, his eyes in distant thought. Finally, he shook his head and got to his feet, coming over to her.
You trust me, Ren?
She nodded, and he took out a brush and some thick, viscous ink.
This is blackstem. It'll stain your skin for a few days, perhaps a week.
Carefully, almost lovingly, he brushed her long hair from her face and painted wards around her eyes. When his warding was done, he looked at her.
What do you see beyond the firelight?
Nothing.
Arlen nodded and laid his hands on her eyes. They were rough hands, scarred and calloused, but gentle as well. There was a soothing tingle in her skin where he touched. He took his hands away, and the sensation faded, but the ward